It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The greatest phrase, I think, in the history of politics is on all of those red and white hats that I see out there. Make America great again. And that's exactly what we're doing. Make America great again. And you know what our new phrase is in 2.5 years? You know what it is, right? Keep America great. That's what it is, because that's where we are. So the Democrats want open borders. Let everybody come in. Let everybody pour in. We don't care. Let them come in from the Middle East. Let them come in from all over the place. We don't care. We're not going to let it happen. And by the way, today I signed an executive order. We're going to keep families together, but the border is going to be just as tough as it's been. Democrats don't care about the impact of uncontrolled migration on your communities, your schools, your hospitals, your jobs, or your safety. Democrats put illegal immigrants before they put American citizens.
That was the President of the United States in Duluth, Minnesota last night. Sandy Rios with you this morning. And his statement, evidently that was a very successful rally last night. I only saw bits of it. But I hear that it was one of his best. A City Journal just did a report that comes to mind when I hear him saying that. It's about what's happening in the country. Yeah, this country, not what's happening at border camps or crossing the border to illegal immigrants, but what's happening to this country. City Journal did a study. They called it Chain Migration Comes to Hazleton. And this is Hazleton, Pennsylvania. In less than 20 years, barely the space of a generation, a town with a population of 25,000 has been radically transformed since the early 2000s by secondary chain migration, principally driven by Dominicans, immigrants, both legal and illegal, as well as second and third generation citizens arriving from the New York metropolitan area. In 2000, Hispanics made up less than 5% of Hazleton's population. They now account for more than 50%. Such rapid and dramatic demographic shifts are rare in U.S. cities. For Hazleton, the consequences have been profound, and the city is struggling to cope. Well, how do you say? I mean, I was on public radio in Boston the other day and only had a few minutes to talk, and so I talked about the disastrous consequences, and then people say, well, what is she talking about? How does that hurt us? The only people that are from parts of the country where they have not seen large increases of immigration, illegal and legal, would ask that question. But there are lots of them out there. But this City Journal breaks it down. It says that it has changed the physical appearance of Luzerne County, which was incorporated as a borough in 1857, became a city in 1891. The public school system, for one, has been radically altered. In 2007, the district was 28% Hispanic and 69% non-Hispanic white. As of 2014, the district was 45% Hispanic and 51% non-Hispanic white. But Hazleton's budget can't keep pace with all the new arrivals, many of whom need special services. A district that had need for only one English as a second language teacher in the 1990s, for example, now has 2,298 English language learners, nearly 20% of its student body. More than half the student body today live in low-income housing. By 2017, the school district, encompassing over 250 square miles of southern Luzerne County and western Carbon County, faced a $6 million deficit, in part driven by the demographic change. That's just the schools. I don't have time to go into all of it. That City Journal article, we'll put it on our Facebook page, though. And today, yes, we are going to talk more about immigration I'm going to have a special guest who's an expert from Capitol Hill who's going to talk about that dust up last night. There was a huge argument between Mark Meadows and Paul Ryan on the floor of the House. You could see it on C-SPAN. We're going to talk about that. This is the day when Republicans are allegedly going to vote on those two bills, the so-called Goodlatte bill and the so-called now what Steve Scalise is miscalling the president's bill. Just not true. That's just not true, but that's how they try to pass this. And so the drama is unfolding on Capitol Hill even as we speak. And I ask you this. I would ask you to pray for those men and women, mostly men right now, serving and on the front lines of this battle. They are they're spending sleepless nights. They're getting harassed, threatened. And so while we complain about the, you know, the inconvenience of hearing too much news and how it depresses us, they're on the front lines on our behalf, and so let's just, for their sake, stay engaged and be smart about this. Of course, the president signed an executive order yesterday. I'm going to let John Roberts actually tell you this part of the story. Here he is.
Brent, good evening to you. It is an about-face for the president, who insisted up until today that only Congress could fix the problem. But it's highly questionable whether this executive order will even go into effect.
You're going to have a lot of happy people.
Under mounting political pressure, even getting an earful from the First Lady and his daughter, President Trump today moved to solve the crisis on the border, signing an executive order to keep families together.
Ivanka feels very strongly. My wife feels very strongly about it. I feel very strongly about it. I think anybody with a heart would feel very strongly about it. We don't like to see families separated. At the same time, we don't want people coming into our country illegally. This takes care of the problem.
The order seeks to keep families together, but does not end zero tolerance. President Trump directing DHS to keep families in custody for the duration of their immigration proceedings, which could take weeks, even months.
If you're really, really pathetically weak, the country's going to be overrun with millions of people. And if you're strong, then you don't have any heart. That's a tough dilemma. Perhaps I'd rather be strong.
The order runs afoul of an Obama-era court decision. Citing widespread deplorable conditions that children were being held in, California District Judge Dolly G. ruled in 2015 that children could only be detained with their parents for 20 days. In the executive order, President Trump directs the Attorney General to ask Judge G. to modify her ruling and allow children to be detained indefinitely. In the unlikely event Judge G were to modify her ruling, opposition groups are ready to pounce at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to stop it. In a statement today, the ACLU saying children don't belong in jail at all, even with their parents under any set of circumstances. If the president thinks placing families in jail indefinitely is what people have been asking for, he is grossly mistaken.
All right, so you see how this is playing out, right? So the president has said, and has been saying, so is Kirstjen Nielsen, that the head of the Department of Homeland Security, that the Congress is the one who has to change the law. This is a mishmash of several different laws and judicial orders. And the one they just talked about just then, that was, again, under Barack Obama, it was Judge Dolly G, who decided that children could not be detained with their parents for more than 20 days. So that's what's caused the separation. The kids cannot stay in detention with their parents. The parents are being held because they've broken the law coming across. There is a judge's order, Dolly G's order, that they cannot stay in captivity, whatever you want to call it, for more than 20 days. So then now there's been a separation. But, of course, it's President Trump's fault. So he's asking this executive order for Dolly G, the judge, Dolly G, to reverse her order. I doubt very seriously she'll do this. It still is up to Congress to change this. And we're going to get into that more. I'm taking more time than I want to talking about that in this first segment because there's a lot more to tell you. You might remember that yesterday I played this some audio for you of Kirstjen Nielsen in a Mexican restaurant in D.C. Just a few nights ago. And this is how she was received. Let's listen. Clip 8.
Seeking asylum in the United States, we call on you to end family separation.
End family separation.
And abolish ICE.
Abolish ICE. Abolish ICE.
Okay. Shame. All right, you get the idea. We played a lot of it, and it was on, we put it on our Facebook page, and we should put it on there again, Adam. Now, here's the story to update that. One of those voices that you heard was a girl named Allison Hraber, who actually, guess what she does for a living? This was the Students for Democrat Society, which is, they are socialist communist. And there was a whole group of them, and they finally ran Kirsten out of the, they made it just miserable. It was unbelievable when you see the clip. So this is the little commies, really, honestly, busy. And one of them, this Allison Hraber, well, she works, where does she work? She works at DOJ, Department of Justice. She works there as a paralegal. And so when the Washington Examiner asked her about, you know, how could you do this? You work for the Trump administration in the Justice Department, and you're here harassing in a public place this director of Homeland Security in this way. And she says, if you see these people in public, you should remind them that they shouldn't have peace. We aren't the only ones who can do this. Anyone who sees Kirstjen Nielsen at dinner, anyone who sees anyone who works at DHS and ICE at dinner can confront them like this. And that's what we hope this will inspire people to do. And then, and of course, then we see that she is using her Twitter account during her work hours at the Department of Justice to go after people like Kirstjen Nielsen and like me if I were there. But I'm not there right now. So here's the other thing. In conjunction with that, Occupy Wall Street, I did a tweet just about 24 hours ago, something like that. It says this, if an ICE agent tries to take your child at the border, don't panic. So it goes through a step of six things about what to do. And it moves to this. Grab the ICE agent from behind and push your knife into his chest with an upward thrust, breaking through his sternum. Reach into his chest and pull out his still beating heart. Hold his bloody heart out for all other agents to see and tell them that the same fate awaits them if they blank with your child again. That was on Twitter for quite a long time before it was pulled down. It was hours, maybe even 24. And graphic pictures of how to do this. In San Francisco, there's a protest, and they're saying ICE equals the American Gestapo. ICE equals the American Gestapo. That was in San Francisco. And then, of course, you probably have heard by now that Peter Fonda, who's the brother of Jane Fonda, wrote to Melania on Twitter, we should rip Barron Trump from his mother's arms and put him in a cage with pedophiles and see if his mother will stand up against that giant blank she is married to. He called for the public caging and rape of Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen in a tweet on Tuesday. In a vulgar tweet, Fonda said Kirstjen Nielsen is a lying blank that should be put in a cage and poked at by passerbys. The blank should be pilloried in Lafayette Square, naked and whipped by passersby while being filmed for posterity. For Sarah Sanders, he said her three children should get kidnapped and locked into a basement while calling her a sexist slur, which I cannot repeat. And then another report just in the last 24 hours, a Stuart, Florida man was arrested Tuesday, saying that he threatened Congressman Brian Mast's children over the Trump administration's child separation immigration policy. This is what he said when he called the office of Congressman Mast. I'm going to find the congressman kids and kill them. If you are going to separate kids at the border, I'm going to kill his kids. We're in dangerous times, and the forces that we are facing, I'm not saying there's a, I'm not even talking about the position on what's happening at the border. It really isn't about that. It's about wicked people using this as an excuse to do their wickedness. We really are operating against the forces of darkness. There's no question about it. When we come back, Rachel Bouvard will be my guest, and we'll find out what happened on Capitol Hill last night, why the tempers flared, what's going to happen today, what it means, the president's executive order, and lots more. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Eighty percent of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. and I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love could save a life.
Here on American Family Radio, this is David Wolin with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Have you ever had a check bounce or a credit card decline? Sometimes it's not our fault, but sometimes it is. We forget our resources are limited, and when we reach the end of them, that's it. There's no more until payday. But God isn't like that. In Psalm 50, he says, "Every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on a thousand hills, for the world is mine, and all that is in it." God's resources are limitless and life-giving. In fact, he is life, and he can give that life to anyone he chooses, and he does that through Jesus, a gift worth more than any check anyone could ever write. Anchor Devotional can help you spend time with him daily. You can get it in print every month. Just visit getanchor.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There is disturbing news from Hollywood regarding the actor Peter Fonda. Mr. Fonda's calling on Americans to target the children of Border Patrol agents and Immigration Customs Enforcement officers. In a series of vulgar Twitter messages, he told people to hack government computers and publish the addresses of agents. He also urged people to surround the schools where agents send their children. Mr. Fonda said, and this is a direct quote, "It's time to scare the children." The Hollywood actor is the younger brother of Jane Fonda, also known as Hanoi Jane. In a separate tweet, he said someone should rip Barron Trump from his mother's arms and throw him in a cage with pedophiles. Threats made against the First Family and federal officers must be investigated, especially threats made by Hollywood celebrities. After all, it was a practicing thespian who assassinated Abraham Lincoln. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I think that he is not reversing his so-called zero tolerance policy, according to the early reads we've been getting. But what he is doing is trying to, and we'll see when we get his executive order, is say that families can be detained
together. What happens next? Because at the end of the day, as Kristen points out, this executive order does not end the zero tolerance policy. Everyone will be continue to be prosecuted, which puts a serious strain on resources.
The other thing I think that's important to know and be mindful of is that under the zero tolerance policy, which is set to continue, so long as these parents are being prosecuted criminally, they will be separated from their children, and the children will be separated from their parents for at least a few days.
It remains to be seen. It's hard to speculate what the order will say, but if the tension of families continues, then we're still going to be creating a different problem.
Right. I'm going to interrupt. That's about a 2.5-minute clip of people on the left, MSNBC, CNN, and other outlets, not happy with the president's executive order, which, of course, they've been clamoring for him to do. Chuck Schumer, a few days ago, the president can take this pen and sign at any time. He doesn't need the Congress. But now they're not happy that he actually signed the executive order, which is trying to stop the separation of children from their parents because of laws and judicial orders that were passed under Democrats. Yeah, it's their fault. It is, just rightly, roundly. And so the president's trying to sign an executive order to try to do something about it. Now they're not happy. I know that's a shock. But Rachel Bovard has followed this so carefully. She's a wonderful writer on this issue in particular right now. She's the Senior Director of Policy at the Conservative Partnership Institute. She's been working on Capitol Hill for a number of years, tons of experience. Legislative Director for Senator Rand Paul. The thing that caught my eye, she managed Rand Paul's 13-hour filibuster against the nomination of former CIA Director John Brennan in 2013. Rachel, you're a hero to me for that alone. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks so much, and thank you for having me.
Rachel, I did not know. I'm sorry. I don't want to get sidetracked, but I did not remember, honestly, that Rand Paul was filibustering the appointment of the nomination of John Brennan. How propitious was that?
I mean, it was a wild time. If you recall, this was the issue over drone strikes, whether or not the U.S. government had the ability to drone Americans on U.S. soil, and we could not get a commitment from the Obama White House at that time that they wouldn't do that. They would not violate so grossly the rights of U.S. citizens, and so that was what that filibuster was about. Yeah, Senator Paul took to the floor until he got that commitment.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that part too. So, I'm not sure quite how to keep up even with the 24-hour news cycle. So, going back to 2013 is even a greater challenge. But, Rachel, let's talk about the issue at hand. And everything we say, you know, there's so much to talk about that this is going to be a challenge. My understanding is that this executive order hinges on this Judge Dolly G's willingness to reverse or stay her order that kids can only stay with their parents in detention for 20 days. Now, what are your thoughts about whether it does hinge on that or whether it has some teeth besides that?
Well, you know, I think this goes exactly to the hypocrisy of Democrats, because none of President Trump's executive orders on immigration, ranging from DACA to sanctuary cities, have been gone through, because Democrats immediately challenged them in court, and that is exactly what's going to happen with this one as well. So these same Democrats who were demanding that he act will now sue him to prevent him from acting. This is a given. These left-leaning groups have already said they're going to do this. When it comes to this particular judge, yes, this again goes to the complicated issue of immigration law and why Congress needs to get in there and act and clarify what the law is when it comes to illegal immigration at the border, because what the president can and cannot do is incredibly vague, and there is a huge amount of subjective discretion allowed to the president on this issue. And so if Congress really wants to fix the problem, they're the ones that have to do it. The fact that there is incredibly vague law and these judges are allowed to come in and make decisions on behalf of the electorate, Congress is not blameless. They have abdicated this responsibility, and this really lies at their feet.
All right. Now, Rachel, I talked to my audience about this a lot, so they should be familiar with the fact that there was a discharge petition in the House started by liberal Republicans to try to pass a very bad immigration bill, and the Democrats were all excited about it, and they were going to bring it to the floor and force a vote. They decided, and they said that they would withhold that if they could get a vote on this so-called compromise bill that's being sort of shepherded by Paul Ryan. In addition to that, there is the allegedly conservative Goodlatte bill, more conservative Goodlatte bill, and the way to get rid of the discharge petition, which would usher in this terrible no good amnesty bill that the Democrats are real excited about, is to have these two votes, and they're supposed to take place today. Okay, so Rachel, last night on the floor, there was a showdown between Mark Meadows and Paul Ryan. What do you know about that?
So in my conversations with Mark Meadows' staff, that seemed to be about whether or not Paul Ryan was going to stick to the deal that they had agreed to, the Freedom Caucus and his office, and that was that these two bills would be brought to the floor. Allegedly, Speaker Ryan was trying to weaken that Goodlatte bill in an effort to sort of, I mean, he's not whipping it anyway, this bill, you know, he's not putting the weight of his office behind it to pass, but he was trying to weaken it further, and that was what the shouting match ensued about on the floor, was whether or not Paul Ryan was going to stick to his commitment to the Freedom Caucus on this issue. My understanding is they met later, and he will, but again, it just goes to the politics of this issue. He will bring the Goodlatte bill to the floor.
As it stands.
Unchanged.
Okay.
As it
stands.
Right, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, but again, it goes to the fact that this is an issue for the leaders. This isn't about policy. This isn't about the rule of law. This is simply about the politics of the issue and not making them look bad.
Yeah. Well, of course, Rachel, in that situation, It's my understanding, you're the expert, my understanding that if they don't vote for one of these two bills, they have to still deal with that discharge petition, which would be the worst of all possible outcomes for those that want strong borders. So the Freedom Caucus was forced into having to vote for one of these bills. I guess they agreed to do it in order to get rid of the discharge petition. So if they change the good bill, the better bill, that's the stuff that would make you angry, don't you think?
No, I think it would, and it goes to the heart of a lot of these issues, which is, you know, you make promises, you have to keep them. Obviously, a lot of conservatives are angry with Republican leadership because many of these guys ran on the issue of getting rid of Obama's executive amnesty and enforcing strong borders, all of which they've backed away from. But more than that, they can't even keep a simple commitment, you know, to their colleagues to bring bills to the floor in such a way that they've agreed to. And I think that's the huge frustration with conservatives and their leaders and with their leadership.
Yeah, no question about it. And we have so much is riding on this. You know, I just read an article by City Journal, at least parts of it, on the air a few minutes ago about the city of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and how it's just been that you don't have to know about this, but this 25,000 population and how it's just been completely upended by illegal and legal immigration and chain migration. Just a nightmare story. So that's what the American people are experiencing. While the left is singling out this problem of the separation of 2,000 children from their what's supposed to be their parents, and that's not a small thing, but it is small in light of the huge immigration problem we have on the border. Rachel, what's going to happen today, you think, in the House? Because the House is the first chamber that's going to consider anything.
So they are scheduled to vote on both of these bills today. They're going to vote on the rule first, which sets up debate on each of these individual bills. So there'll be two rules and then two bill votes. Right now, the whip count on the Goodlatte bill, it is not going to pass. It was never intended to pass. It's a head pat to conservatives to say, hey, look, we did something for you. But the leadership, as far as I can tell, is not putting the weight of their office behind it. They're not really whipping it. So they are putting the weight of their office behind the second bill, which is this Ryan consensus bill, which a lot of conservatives are concerned about. Numbers USA, a big conservative immigration group, has come out opposed to it. It gives amnesty to 1.8 million. There are questions about whether it's border security chain migration provisions are tough enough. But this is the bill that's being whipped. And to be honest, the whip, I'm not quite sure. I don't think it's going to pass. I think it will be very close. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a nail biter this afternoon. So I would say if your listeners are interested in this issue, now is the time to weigh in with your congressman for or against or however you feel about it, because the vote is going to be close and it's going to be this afternoon.
Yeah, well, I'll weigh in on it. To me, the Goodlatte bill is the only thing that's even palatable. Because the other one, as I understand, Rachel, is it claims to do all the things that President Trump wanted while really not doing them, bottom line. And also, as you gave a number, a quantifying number on the number of people that could be legalized, but as I understand it, there's a provision in there that would, you know more than I do, so correct me if I'm wrong. I think there's a provision in that compromise bill to allow parents of immigrants, more parents to be allowed to come in. The potential of untold millions being legalized by this is much greater. You know, and interestingly enough, Rachel, my understanding is that Steve Scalise is calling that compromise bill the president's bill as he's been presenting it. What do you know about that?
So the White House has been actively involved in these discussions. For better or for worse, they apparently do support this Ryan plan. They've been calling members about it. However, it doesn't really comport with what the president has laid out. You know, he has these four pillars that he said he wants in an immigration bill. You know, he will deal with DACA in exchange for a border wall, an end to the diversity visa program, and an end to chain migration. These are his four pillars. This bill does not line up with those four pillars. So I think it's frustrating to some members because they feel like they're being asked to put themselves on the line for a bill that they, you know, don't support and that the president shouldn't be supporting. So I think there's some confusion a little bit between the White House and conservatives. I do think that Scalise is a little bit misrepresenting what the White House has said, but that said, the White House has also been a little bit mixed.
You know, Rachel, I don't know if you saw this, but Tea Party Patriots did a survey with John McLaughlin on how people feel about the issue of immigration now, given everything that's unfolding. Just came out yesterday. Let me just run this by you. The bottom line is McLaughlin says likely voters do not support amnesty and will punish Republican congressmen who vote for it. The numbers don't lie, says John McLaughlin. By a margin of 42% to 25% among all likely voters, and by a margin of 61% to 18% among GOP voters, and 59% to 19% among Trump voters, voters would be less likely to vote to reelect a GOP member of Congress who voted to provide amnesty for a group of illegal immigrants. Have you guys done any polling on this? Any thoughts about this is 1,000 likely voters conducted June 15th to the 19th.
So I have seen the results of that polling as well. We have not done polling ourselves, but those results comport with the history on this issue. You know, one of the things I think people are very frustrated by is that a lot of these things that conservatives say they support, these are 80% issues across the country. For years, voters have supported stronger border enforcement, ending extended family chain migration, so bringing in your aunts, uncles, cousins simply because you have legal status. These are, again, issues that have broad support, and yet conservatives and Republicans cannot muster the will to push these across the finish line. And so I think that's, you know, as the polling shows, at their peril. This issue has decided elections for a lot of members. It's, you know, tanked careers of senators. It's tainted legacies of presidents. Like, they need to be very careful on this issue, pay attention to what the voters feel, instead of politically maneuvering to protect their own reputations in the Capitol.
Yeah, let me give one more stat, and then I want to ask you another question. According to McLaughlin, fully 75% of all likely voters do not think it is fair or right to allow a particular group of illegal immigrants to jump the line compared to just 11% who think it's fair. And then he breaks the numbers down. That's 75% of all likely voters. Rachel, changing the subject ever so slightly, but you can plead the fifth on this if you want. But what do you think that this particular latest crisis in the House of Representatives will do to this whole fight and speculation over who the next speaker will be? Because Ryan has said he's going to resign from Congress. He's a lame duck speaker of the House. What do you think is going to, what effect it might have on that race, you think?
Well, I do think that this is proving again that because Ryan is stepping down, it's creating a leadership vacuum. The leadership has not handled the situation well, and you can argue it's because no one listens to Paul Ryan right now because he is a lame duck. And so I think you're seeing a lot of frustration among the members. There's a little bit of a movement now to force him out earlier so, you know, the House can select the next speaker. I think the frustration is reasonable. Lame ducks have a lot of trouble gaining traction. The Republican conference wants to be led by someone who has skin in the game like they do. Right now, as Paul Ryan is departing, he doesn't have to care, about what the voters think because he's leaving. So I think that that is weighing very heavily on the minds of the conference. And I think after this dust settles on this immigration issue, there will be some very serious conversations about how to move forward on this issue. I also think Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise are trying to capitalize on this and force the conference's hand a little bit into choosing one of them. You also have the dark horse potential candidacy of Jim Jordan waiting in the wings. So I do think that this is going to be there's going to be a lot of palace intrigue on this issue pretty shortly.
Yep. And you know what? I've not asked you, I have to, because we have 1 minute left, about the Senate. I know that Ted Cruz has introduced a pretty good, from all accounts, a pretty good bill to sort of legislatively stop this separation of children from their parents who've broken the law by coming in. But what else is happening in the Senate? What do you think they're inclined to do? I know the answer already, but tell me.
They've tried to move to consider the Cruz bill immediately to address this issue. He's being blocked by Senator Schumer and Senate Democrats who are basically pushing an open borders bill. So the Senate, nothing has changed. It's completely gridlocked.
How encouraging, you know? How encouraging, Rachel. And still we march on. Honestly, I do believe that there's power in truth, and that's why we continue to speak it and just to pray that God will cause that truth to cut through all of the nonsense that happens in the Capitol. Rachel, it's nice to meet you by phone. Rachel Bovard, who is the Senior Director of Policy for the Conservative Partnership Institute. Rachel, it's a pleasure and hope to talk to you again soon.
Yes, likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, my pleasure. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. What are gates? They are defensive tools used to keep stuff out, to keep an advancing force at bay. Too often, the enemy is successful in putting Christians on defense, when the facts are the Lord established his church as an aggressive, offensive, territory-taking body. The Lord never meant for us to sit on the sidelines of life or to cower in the corner as a result of the wickedness in our culture. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. The light of the world cannot be contained. The Lord is building his church, and the mamby-pamby gates of hell shall not prevail against us.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The level of hostility in our country towards Christians seems to be growing with each passing day. Yet now is not the time to back down. This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress teaches how to be salt and light in a culture that's becoming increasingly opposed to Christian values. Don't miss this special presentation of America and the Bible, all this week on Pathway to Victory.
Join us for Pathway to Victory with Pastor Robert Jeffress, weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
The AFA Journal covers critical, contemporary issues that American families care about. Here's Joy Lucius.
Students meet Jesus on campus. It's about two campus ministries that are having radical, revelational movements for God in their public school setting.
Sign up for a free one-year subscription to the AFA Journal at afajournal.org.
When God calls you, all you got to do is obey and do it.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. Just hit *345. That's *345. *345.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Speaker Paul Ryan seems determined to make the capstone of his career pushing through the House of Representatives legislation granting amnesty to millions of illegal aliens. A new poll of likely voters suggests, however, that supporting such a bill would be a political tombstone for many GOP congressmen. Republican legislators preparing to vote today on Mr. Ryan's amnesty bill and another one offered by Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte ignore at their peril a brand new survey conducted for the Tea Party patriots by highly respected pollster John McLaughlin. He warns, quote, by a margin of 61% to 18% among GOP voters and 59% to 19% among Trump voters, voters would be less likely to vote to re-elect a GOP member of Congress who voted to provide amnesty for a group of illegal immigrants, unquote. Don't go there, Congressman. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The media never talks about the American victims of illegal immigration. I know them well. I know so many of them. I campaigned with them. What's happened to their children? What's happened to their husbands? What's happened to their wives? The media doesn't talk about the American families permanently separated from their loved ones because Democrat policies released violent criminals into our communities. We need safety. We need safety. They don't bring cameras to interview the angel moms whose children were killed by criminal aliens who should have never been here in the first place, not even close. They don't want to talk to the angel moms. But as your president, I will always fight to protect American families. Always.
All right, that was the president in Duluth, Minnesota last night. And he's right. You know, he's right. If you've heard the stories I mentioned on that, my interview with NPR in Boston about Kate Steinle being separated from her parents. She's the young girl who was killed on the wharf in San Francisco, shot by an illegal immigrant, forever separated from her parents. Not so concerned about that. Not so concerned about all the parents I have interviewed who have lost their children to the violence or the carelessness or the drunkenness of illegal immigrant criminals who've come into this country unrightfully and taken the lives of their kids. But the left doesn't care so much about that. It really is true. And so anyway, let me go now to Facebook and email, because I've gotten so many interesting responses, you know, some challenging, some people wishing me, no, not dead. Yes, I think one did wish me dead. Others just say vile things I can't repeat. And that's because of my interview on Boston Radio. But I want to read one who was very respectful. Because she just was. She's very respectful, and she deserves a good answer. This is from Dara, who is in Providence, Rhode Island. She says, I just finished listening to an interview with Sandy Rios on WBUR Boston. I was deeply distressed by her unchristian views. As a pro-life Catholic, middle-aged woman, I was utterly dismayed by Ms. Rios' failure to provide any data on her claim that most of the children brought by adults to the U.S. southern border are brought as fronts for adults who are scammers. Actually, Dara, they edited out the part of the interview where I said that 10,000 of the 12,000 who were currently at the border were not with their families of origin. And we don't even know about the 2,000, actually, but at least 10,000 were not. They were alone, or they were with other persons that their parents sent them with, or people that picked them up along the way. So that's the stat on that. She says, more importantly and centrally, though, I was shocked by Mrs. Rios, a Christian woman, arguing for a level of nationalism that is fundamentally unchristian. Every time an apostle asked Jesus a question that revealed the apostle's assumption that Jesus believed that families are more important than the human family, that family loyalty more important than universal love, Jesus was clear in giving his most radical teaching, love one another does not mean love family or tribe or nation more. This teaching is fundamental. I urge Mrs. Rios to reread the story of the Good Samaritan. Dara, that's a very good challenge, very respectful. I have to say, you know, when you think about the Good Samaritan who took care of the man in the ditch, that's a wonderful story, but keep in mind that the Good Samaritan did not do anything that harmed his children by helping that man. As far as we know, he didn't neglect his kids. He didn't fail to take care of them. You know, the Bible does say also, if you don't care of your own family, you are worse than an infidel. And we all know what an infidel means now, right? Thanks to the Muslim influx here and our heightened awareness of that word used by the Muslim population. But it means you're worse than a non-believer, than an atheist, than somebody that doesn't believe in God at all if you don't take care of your own. When you say that Jesus believed that love one another does not mean love family or tribe or nation more, I'm not sure about that. And let's just think about what Jesus himself did. You know, yes, you're right, that he taught them when his mothers and brothers were outside trying to get inside when he was teaching, and he got the word that his mothers and brothers were standing at the door, and he said, who's my mother? Who are my brothers? He was making the point, I think, that in the body of Christ, yeah, that pecking order does leave. Sometimes people who are not our blood become closer to us than our naturally born family. There's no question about that. That is a spiritual principle. It's a principle in the body of Christ that we are brothers and sisters in a new kind of formation, a new pecking order. But that doesn't apply to the secular world. There's a different grid, like Romans 13, if you have read, but I'm sure you have, Dara. Romans 13 talks about the rulers. God places rulers, and sometimes they're godless. There are varying degrees of God-honoring people, or not at all, but God establishes rule and order so that order can be maintained on this world. That's a different order. It's not the order of the body of Christ, but it is the order of the world in which we live. I don't believe for a minute that Jesus ever thought that you should not love your mother or your father. In fact, one of the first commandments is love your father and mother. Why would you do that? Why would you love your mother and your father and honor them? Why would God say that if he did not respect the order of families? And as I said on that interview, and I'll say again, America is our family here on earth. It's not that we would mistreat others. It's just that we love them first, and they are our responsibility first. And certainly our children are our responsibility first before our neighbors. There's a lot more to say about that, but I hope that that helps. Also, I just wanted the word, a lot of people weighed in saying, how could I dare say that that we could not feed everyone? We cannot clothe everyone. We can't rescue everyone. And people were appalled. I think people were appalled who don't have any biblical knowledge. They love to quote scripture. I'm not talking about Dara, but some people love to quote scripture and speak about as though they are authorities on the teachings of Jesus when they are not. You know, Jesus himself, when you look at his life on earth, many times had to get away from the crowds. And what did they want? They wanted to be fed like the 5,000. They wanted to be healed. They wanted FaceTime. They wanted him to do something for them. He could not heal them all. He could not feed them all. He didn't feed them all. He could have. Of course he could have. But he physically couldn't, and he didn't. And so he is our example. There are limits on what we can do as a country. And there's a limit on what you can do as a person, isn't there? Have you ever been to India and been surrounded? I have, by beggars and children on the streets. I've been in Vietnam, Russia, little gypsy children. I've been to a lot of countries where the kids just crowd around you. And at first you want to help, and then you think, I can't. I'm overwhelmed. I can't help all of these children. So it's just a misunderstanding of Jesus and what he was able to do in the flesh. And what we're able to do in the flesh as well. Only God is going to be able to fulfill the needs of everyone everywhere. But meanwhile, that doesn't mean do nothing. It means do what we can. That's why I say every day, not in terms of charitable work, because I'm more talking about just the change of ideas and making a difference in the world. That's kind of what God's called me to do. But we can't fix this. We are in a mess, not with just immigration, with national security, with our moral free fall, with our families. It's overwhelming. I never fool myself to think that I can fix all of this. I can't. I know I can't. You can't either. I know God can, but I also know that I have to do something. So that's the long answer. And by the way, we'll repost that interview. And Adam, if you would label that as, I don't think people knew by the Facebook post that it was me on Boston. It just says talk show host. So that people can be clear and they can listen. All right, this is from Mark from Virginia. Guten Morgen, Sandy. It's become increasingly difficult lately to listen to you defend and spin the disastrous moral shortcomings of our president every day. And I really wonder how you, as a self-proclaimed Christian, can live with yourself, but it's not my place to judge. All I can say is, Mark, it's not, and I'm so glad. I think I'd be in trouble if it were your place to judge. As an immigrant from Germany, I see it as my duty to speak up about your factual inaccuracies. And you know what, Mark? I always appreciate being corrected because I do my best to get facts and nouns and everything straight. But here's his criticism. I didn't remember the word chancellor when I was talking about Angela Merkel yesterday. She is the chancellor, not the president or prime minister. Did not remember the title yesterday. He says, apparently you are misinformed than I thought. And then he says, the person Merkel has clashed with over immigration is Horst Seehofer. He's not Bavaria's president. There's no such thing. He's more like the governor. So I misspoke on that and did not remember Horst Seehofer's name. That's true. So let me just say this, Mark. I want to get everything right. I want to get every fact right. I want to get every name right, but I am limited. I actually am trying to cover the world pretty much. You may not know, Mark, maybe you do, that I lived in Berlin and actually do know a lot about what's going on in Germany, but I do have, sometimes I can't remember in the moment. Oh, have you ever been, let me just do it this way. This is the way I feel sometimes. I am like a circus performer on a high rope, a tight wire. I'm walking it every day. I'm trying to talk to you about, well, maybe not a million. That might be an exaggeration, and Mark would write me again to say that's not possible. So hundreds of things. I read so much every morning. I have so much in my head. And honestly, I confess to you that I cannot always remember every geographic area, every city, town, politician, staff members, bill number, German chancellor. I can't remember names sometimes. I do. It's a challenge. And I don't really have a team. You know, like Rush Limbaugh has a whole team. He's got people sitting there with a safety net to help, you know, help him remember certain things are correct. I don't really have that. So I confess to you that I do forget nouns, but this is something I will promise you. When it comes to the facts of what's going on and the inside story or a news story, I'm very, very meticulous about that. I misreported Barbara Comstock, was defeated in Virginia, last week, because someone misinformed me about that, and I repeated it and immediately corrected it. So that to me is even worse. Because generally on the facts, generally, as much as I can, I just don't get those things wrong. I know what I'm talking about. But yes, a word, a name, a geographical location, you might have me there, and I appreciate the correction always. He also, one more thing about Mark, he says, Donald Trump lied about Germany's crime rate, a lie that you repeated on your show today. And then he goes on to tell me how the crime rate is down and the lowest level in 30 years. You know, Mark, I just don't believe that. If you read Gatestone, which I do, Gatestone is a think tank in New York, and they have a different set of pieces of information. You know, I do know that the German government is trying to downplay the incidences of rape and violence as a result of bringing in so many Middle Eastern young men. But I was just reading yesterday, this is one of the latest articles from Gatestone, Germany's migrant rape crisis, a failure of the state, the increase in rape. I've heard personal stories about this. So I'm having trouble believing that the ministry in Germany is being honest about that. So I'm not repeating Trump lies. I'm telling you what I believe is actually true. Check Gatestone and you can find that out. So there you go. That's Mark. And then I heard from another German gentleman and I want to read you his. His name is, good morning, madam. My name is Jürgen. And I was born in Nuremberg, Germany. My wife and I have been pen pals. In the 70s, she's a Native American. In 1997, I visited her for the first time in the USA. We fell in love, and in 1979, God has welded us in marriage together, and we've been married to this day. He says, I came on a tourist visa to the U.S., applied for U.S. citizenship in 1979, required to go to a background check, physical medical checkup, criminal checkup, got my green card, was required to study the U.S. Constitution and history of the God-blessed USA and my state where I was living. It was a very expensive process, but it was worth it. And I was required to learn English to give a test in reading as well as writing and speaking. My wife spoke German, so we communicated for a while. I'm sick when I see today everybody coming to our country without legal documents and refusing to speak English or to apply legally to become a part of our nation, the USA. It makes me sick to listen to the liberals who are the real enemy of our nation. We are living in, I think the last times, he means, as the Bible calls it, the end times. In Germany, I spent my teenager time in a disco outside my family home. For some reason, one day I just was looking up in this dark sky and prayed, if there is really a God, then please get me out of this miserable life. Give me a girl I could spend the rest of my life with. And he said, I found this girl. She's been my wife for 40 years. God heard my prayers. And he goes on to say, pray for our country, our leadership, and the peace of Israel. And that's from Jürgen, my other German listener. Jürgen, thank you. I appreciate that. God bless you. Oh, there's so much more to say, and now I'm out of time. But you know, really, only God is the answer to all of this, all of the problems that we face. Don't forget to be in His Word and go to church on Sunday and set yourselves right. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.